Hello, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's Thursday, the 4th of February, 2010. I'm Hereward Fenton, returning for another week. We've got a big stack of stories that have built up over the week. We've got some points we need to summarise from last week's climate change extravaganza in Australia, and we've got a bunch of breaking stories that I'm going to cover. And
that we're going to break down.
Yeah, we're going to break them down. Welcome to the show, Josh Jackson.
G'day, Harold. Another wonderful week of amazing news.
Amazing news, extraordinary times that we're living in, full of things that are basically changing day by day. You know, we've had the climate change debacle, the climate gate, the failure of the Copenhagen conference, Lord Monckton turning up in Australia. Now we've got Tony Abbott prepared to sit down and talk to Lord Monckton. We've got the whole system in disarray because of the events that have transpired, led by people who are freedom fighters like you and me, Josh.
Yeah, but you know, one thing I'd like to quickly warn our listeners is never. You know, I've heard people say on the radio, oh, I wish Monckton was our Prime Minister. Stuff, ridiculous stuff like that. No one is a hero. No one should ever be put on a pedestal because Monckton's got his problems as well. I mean, you know, he wanted everyone that has AIDS put in prison forcibly.
Indeed.
Put away and stuff like that. You know, yeah, he's a real champion when it comes to climate, pushing this climate change hoax. And what I really like about Monckton is that he's really exposing the world government behind the big climate change hoax, and that's for the first time I'm seeing headlines all over the news, including on the ABC, how this is setting up a world government to forcibly tax everybody and shut down free markets. So that's amazing, because whenever climate change was talked about in terms of a skeptical sense of man-made global warming.
Yes,
it was always just, "Oh, is it happening? Isn't it happening?" or anything like that. It's never the global taxation or anything like that was ever brought into the picture. So Monckton did bring that stuff in, but it's important never to put people like this on a pedestal too high and to treat them as some sort of savior. You know, that's the Obama problem that Obama had. Everyone treated him like the savior's coming, when really he's just another politician, and that's exactly what Monckton is. But he's doing fantastic work, and I'm really happy with what he's done coming to Australia.
Indeed, and everyone has their strengths and flaws. You know, we all do. You do. I do. We work together, and we respect Lord Monckton for what he's done, and I do believe he's genuine when he says that he is standing up for the little guy against the big guy. I don't necessarily go down the road that he goes down in a whole lot of other things that he might have said in the past. That doesn't matter, because really there comes a point when you're up against the kind of threats and the kind of tyranny, you do have to form alliances. It's a really important point to make.
Exactly. Like, I mean, honestly, Tony Abbott is the last person I would ever have wanted to cheer about. And then when he got in power to defeat the ETS in the last time around, it was like, oh, yay, you know. Tony Abbott, I've never been so happy to hear Tony Abbott's name. It's ridiculous, because he's an absolute, you know, like moron in terms of a lot of other policies that he, and you know, he's just another politician. So,
well, yeah, I mean, we know he's playing it. We know that he's seen that he can get votes out of this, so he's adapted his policy to exploit that, because obviously Labor isn't exploiting it at all. Labor's wedged themselves into a corner on this. So all of those people out there who are basically dissenters, who are against the view which has been shoved down our throats year after year with all the television advertising, you know, the black balloons coming out of your computer, all of this sort of psyop of mind control, brainwashing about propaganda on the climate change alarmism, all the people who have resisted that actually amounts to quite a lot of people. Because we saw at the Sheraton Hotel last week, massive turnout. They had to turn people away at the doors of the hotel because there were so many people in there. The security were getting a bit nervous. There were over 1,000 people in a room designed for 800. It was really packed out.
You've got to think about it. This was a $20 per head deal, right? So these are people prepared to pay $20 to go see someone talk about the other side of climate change. People have to actually pay money to see the other side of climate change, you know, because you never see it free to air. You never see it on our free media. So people are prepared to pay this sort of money to see someone actually give the other side of the story.
Now, this tendency that what we've seen is that government makes certain things policy and decides for you what is good for you is a principle that we are standing against, that Lord Monckton is standing with us in this struggle against this mindset, which is, it bleeds and leaches into all different aspects of our lives. We're really, you know, even the climate change issue itself is only a part of this overarching thing that we are, this threat that we are actually working against, this tendency that we see where basically a mindset is created in the population to accept that your overlords, as it were, can decide for you what is best for you, and you have no say in it.
Well, that's right. I mean, it comes back to Orwellian sort of farm, animal farm style stuff, where we are livestock in terms of our taxes. And that's all we are. You know, we don't have a say in really. We have these sort of trivial says in our lifestyles, but basically, you know, I mean, to change any sort of law once it's put into action is extraordinarily hard. And people say, oh, you can vote, you know, you've got the right to vote. But really, I mean, it's really not much of a choice. So it's really important to, when you have freedom, is to defend them, because that's a lot easier than trying to get them back. And I guess that's what we're really pushing for on this show, is to open people's eyes up to the fact that, you know, freedoms disappear very quickly under the guise of fear. And always has done. And so it's really important to look at something that's fearful and look at it from many different angles and who's actually projecting the fear onto society to get the means of what they want. And usually, you know, I'm seeing it time and time again, usually 80%, it's usually drummed up and hyped up more. So the fear isn't actually even there. And if it is, it's drummed up and hyped up enough to make it extraordinarily big to pass some law to protect you.
Well said.
Yeah.
Well said. And look, we're going to move into the next, I guess, component of this fear grid. So just stand by. Look, we've got the Venerable John Bursall coming in about 10 minutes. And he's going to be going through various issues of the day with us. But I just want to move into the internet freedom issue. There's multiple stories, folks, here breaking on this topic. And one of them is related to the concepts of internet piracy. And I'm hoping that our listeners have been following our shows and listened to our interview with the Pirate Party president, because that's extremely important grounding for what I'm about to discuss. Because there's a breaking story, and it literally is breaking right now. I only discovered it about 10 minutes ago. It's currently headlining ABC News at abc.net.au/news. It's top story. And what this story is, folks, is really important. It's really important for us. It's a blow for freedom for us. And we should be really proud of the fact that there are people in this country that are standing up. But we also shouldn't sit back on our laurels and think that the fight's over. No, it's not, because this is a court case which has gone to federal court.
And this is the IINet court case,
indeed,
right?
It's the IINet court case, which I think you you posted on, you tweeted about a couple of days ago. And
yeah, on Twitter, twitter.com/truthnewsoz.
Indeed, indeed. And really important source of information, that Twitter feed. Now, the federal court basically has ruled on this. And now let me just summarize. I'll break it down into just bullet points for you. IINet is an ISP in Australia, and they have been sued by the Australian television, film and television industry, because they say that it is up to the ISP to monitor and police the behavior of the individuals who use the internet service, like you and me, and that if an individual is, for example, using BitTorrent to download something which is, you know, allegedly copyright owned, that that then becomes the liability of the ISP. And this was a really important case, a landmark case, because if the Australian television and film industry had won this case, it would have created a whole cascade of events. And that cascade of events would have led to, really, a situation...
It would have shut down. Like, honestly, folks, what that would have meant is ISPs would have had to go to extraordinary lengths, which is almost impossible, because it's impossible for ISPs to do everything. And what they would have to do is grow massively, so they'd have to grow their staff numbers to try and keep track of everything that you're doing. So they'd be spying on everything you're doing. They would also then, of course, the internet costs would skyrocket. Everything would, your internet probably would slow down a bit. There was no way they could police everything that you possibly download.
Well, indeed,
even if they only watch BitTorrent, it means, oh no, what if you actually email your friend an MP3 or a link to a movie, you know?
Indeed, and you get the situation where, this is what happened in France, where they were trying to pass a law that turned the ISP into like a policing agent, and the ISP was required to cut you off the internet if you breached copyright more than three times.
That's right.
But of course, there's always going to be mistakes in a system like that, even if we were to accept the principle, which we don't. And I'm going to get back into that subject in this broadcast, because I think, unfortunately, Josh, some of our listeners aren't quite informed about the deep philosophical issues over copyright, especially when it comes to technology and bits and bytes on a computer, because there's been, again, so much propaganda. And again, because we have this tendency to fall into the pattern of simply accepting when the government and authorities decide for you what is best for you, and then cloak that and sugarcoat that in a way that makes people think it's good, because they think it's good because they think, oh, it's protecting property rights. And everyone wants to protect property rights, don't they? You know, you want to, if you own a house, you want to protect your property. If you you own goods, you want to protect those goods. Everyone thinks protecting property, you know, music is property. A musician creates something, it should be protected. Goes into that mindset, they bring that down to you. They deliver that to you as the sugar-coated packaging for you to accept something that is actually taking away your freedom, taking away your rights, crushing innovation, crushing culture and technology. It's very sophisticated. It's a scientific dictatorship, as someone has said that I listened to. It's a scientific dictatorship.
No, that is a really good way of putting it, because that's what it is. It's a scientific way to dictate what you are allowed to see, download, do, and share. And really, how in God's world is an ISP going to know if something's copyright or not? I mean, it's near impossible without, you know, 4 hours of research into anything. And so let's say I send Herod an MP3. How would an ISP know if that's copyright? I could have made that at home, and they wouldn't know. So they'd have to take the song, they'd have to listen to it, they'd have to think about it, they'd have to go have a meet, they'd have to then, you know, search the web to see if anyone else is using it, using algorithms.
I'm going to go one step further on you, Josh. I'm going to advance one step further, because here's what I'm going to say to you. The history of culture, going back thousands of years, has always involved one, you know, innovator, some clever person, some creative person doing something original, then other people copy it. That's
Absolutely.
What we call culture. That's how language developed, that's how music developed, that's how art developed. If you If you try to crush and suppress that, you will crush and suppress civilization itself.
Yeah, innovation, you crush and suppress movement, evolution. And all art, like you just stated, all art is an evolution of the last thing that happened. People take inspiration. And, I mean, there was a great documentary. I mentioned it when we interviewed the head of the Pirate Party. But it was on the ABC, and I'll have to find the name of that documentary and see if we can get the name of that.
Great.
But it really went into that whole thing because they were following musicians that were using samples and in their songs and following what would happen if, they were to try and release that. And, of course, they'd get sued like crazy. Now, what happens is when they say, well, let's have a look at who brought these rules in. Well, and let's have a look at where they copied. And a lot of the reasons for these laws are from Disney. And Disney copied all his stuff. So he saw some old concepts, some old books, and he actually, a lot of the characters pretty much look exactly the same as what came out of these books and these other older comics. So to say that he never copied is a lie. So it's every bit of art is always inspired from or literally copied and changed and morphed into the next evolution of that thing. And that is what this stifles massively.
It does. And, you know, people often laugh when I make this analogy, but basically criminalizing the downloading of an MP3 file that you just want to listen to because you want to have that enjoyment, right, is no different to criminalizing someone sitting down in front of the piano and having a sing-along without a license. You know what I mean? You might as well criminalize that because it's exactly the same thing.
That is criminal. You know,
potentially it is,
in fact. If you follow the laws, that is criminal by sitting... You know, you're not allowed to share musical notes on the internet. I'm not allowed to send you sheet music.
Right, because that, again, is under this ridiculous concept of copyright. The concept of copyright itself has to be re-examined. Wouldn't you agree with that, Josh?
I do, and I'm not against people's intellectual property.
Yes.
I'm not against that concept. But what I am against is the jailing and the taking away of people's freedoms to try and police some vague mass blanketing law to try and stop people doing something that's quite sort of normal and natural, which isn't going to take any money away in terms of, maybe it'll take no quantifiable amount from an artist. I mean, literally, you know, when you download a song, you are not taking anything from an artist.
Indeed. Look, we're just going to have to pause it there. We want to continue this discussion.
In fact, it's a form of advertising.
Totally. Look, I want to continue this discussion with John in a moment. So I'm just going to pause here and we'll be right back after this break with John Bursell, a great frequent visitor to our show. Engineer and expert in many things. Also a musician, by the way. So I'm sure he has some views on this. So stand by and we'll be right back.
When you're sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Okay, welcome back to Truth News. Tonight we're having a general discussion of a bunch of news stories. I've got Josh Jackson with me, and I'm just joined now by John Bursell, the Venerable John Bursell of truthaction.org.au and 9/11 Truth King of Australia. Welcome to the show, John.
G'day, how you going? Well, first thing I'd like to say is happy birthday to my father, who turned 65 today, and he won the Award of Australia.
Birthday.
I'm back on Australia Day. Did you hear about that?
That is really fantastic. Yes, I did hear that, and I meant to mention it. Thanks for reminding us. Really important.
Yeah, he won anthropological research, which Harold happens to have a degree in. And, basically the work he's done for the history of the Aboriginals south of the Harbour Bridge and also his work within the local community uncovering the real history. So maybe there's a bit of a common theme there.
Wow, the truth, the historical truth, the truth seekers run deep in you, Mr. Bursell.
Yeah, they do, they do. I don't always get on with my my father. He doesn't particularly like my 9/11 work. He thinks I should be working closer to home. But, yeah, I don't think he understands the world quite the way we do. It's really, I think the main places we have to play these days is on the world and in the community. So, you know, local and global, that's the way I like to deal with things, I think.
Great.
Because
well,
so many things are one of the issues. The issues you guys are fighting, you've been fighting with this great radio show that you've been doing now for, I don't know, over a year. You know, the climate scandal, the internet censorship, civil liberties, all those sorts of things. You know, they're global as well as local.
Look, I'm getting a bit of interference on the line here. John, have you got a bad connection at your end, or is it actually just interference at my end? Are you picking us up okay?
Yeah, it's actually a very, very clear Skype call. Very clear.
Look, I'm getting a lot of crackling. I'm going to have to just call you back. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Okay, we're back again with a new connection. Sorry about the problems there. We often have this problem with our Skype conference calls. Not quite sure what it is. But look, John, continue from where you left off there, if possible.
Well, I was just saying that, you know, really I see the world in this, you know, what we're doing in our local communities and what we're doing to question, you know, the things that are going on in the world. But obviously they, you know, I know that one of the things that you've been looking into is the body scanner, say, for instance. You know, we see off the back of 9/11 with the war on terrorism that, you know, they decide on a new control, a new mechanism of fear and imposing their police state sort of things based on these false flag operations. And they come through the whole world. You know, they start in one place and next thing you know, we've got body scanners. So, you know, we really do have to fight these battles on a global scale, and that's why the internet's been so successful, I imagine.
We do. And look, we were just, before you came on, we were just covering a story that's actually a breaking story right at this moment. And just before, I just want to ask you, like, what is your position, John, on the whole question of copyright and pirating? Because this is actually very much, in my view, part of the whole paradigm of the way in which we either go for real freedom or we allow the nanny state to take over with the corporate agenda behind it, basically trying to control, to strangle us in a maze of legislation and criminalizing of the most basic things that end up putting us in a state where we really don't have freedom. And the piracy question is part of that spectrum of stuff that actually includes the internet censorship issue and other issues like the freedom to basically get on a plane without having someone interfere with your, you know, strip search you virtually. A lot of these things are all part of this paradigm that we're trying to avoid of the top-down nanny state basically controlling us. Now, John, you're a musician. You're an engineer and a musician. Where do you stand on the question of people using programs like BitTorrent to download supposedly copyrighted material? What's your position on that?
Well, I've probably got an old-fashioned point of view on it, but I see the fact that the world's changed, and it's changed in such a way that really I don't think there's any going back. So I think at the end of the day, the best way to go is just pure freedom, and then somehow culturally and within ourselves, we have to change the way that we do things so that we can support artists.
Correct.
Because without art in the community and without music, we don't have a lot as a society. So we have to support those people. We're at the moment, I think we're somewhere in between this transition from, you know, from what we used to know, where there was a way of, you know, musicians making a little money from record sales, etc. Now to a situation where we have, you know, the availability and the technology to get people's music out there, but there's not really much of a way for them to make a living, especially as the internet and, you know, infotainment and, you know, big screen TVs and everything really has put a lot of people into their houses, and there's not a lot of action on the street with you know, for musicians these days. So, yeah, I don't know. It's one of the difficult ones. I don't steal people's music, and I don't know if that's the right way to phrase it. Maybe that offends some people, but I personally, you know, buy music.
Can I give you an opinion?
That's just my personal way of dealing with it. But I see that we definitely have to move to. I don't think persecuting you know, people for downloading stuff is the way to go. I definitely don't agree with that.
Can I just give you an opinion on it? And then I'll hand it over to Josh, and Josh, you can give your opinion. But basically, I want to say this, is that in the history of the last, say, half a century, mm-hmm. where we've seen the giant corporatization of entertainment generally, the way in which a small group of incredibly powerful companies ended up controlling all of the music that we listen to through the concept of copyright, always using the concept of copyright and always enforcing it and tying musicians to really onerous contracts to exploit them, to restrict their behavior, all using this concept of copyright. And what did we see? What did we see happen? Well, there was an emergence of great music that happened in the 60s. But what we've seen since then is, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, but I hold it pretty passionately, what we've seen is a stranglehold of culture where our culture hasn't gone forward at all. We are still stuck. Our music and culture hasn't advanced from the late 1960s. We are stuck. And I argue that part of the reason is because of this outrageous and actually dishonest application of copyright and control on the culture through the music, through the television, through the radio, to basically tell us what we want, to basically brainwash us into actually wanting what they tell us we want by not giving us any other alternatives because they control the medium.
Yeah.
And then when something like the internet comes along that gives people true freedom and gives you the ability to upload to YouTube as much as anyone else, and the great technological improvements with computers and recording software that you can now, for a couple of $1,000s, produce a really brilliant professional-level recording that will compete with the top studios, now they're using the copyright law again to try and crush people's freedoms. And the average person who wants to be a musician and succeed is still crushed because they're still going to be tied into these onerous contracts. And I don't see the concept of copying a file, transferring a file digitally as theft. I never will. I'll never agree to it. And I could talk all night about it, but I totally dispute the designation of that as theft. I'll hand it over to Josh.
Well, I think you're spot on there, Harold and John. I mean, we all respect the rights of the artist, and that is very important. But, you know, the important distinguish when you have a look at what is being copied, what is being shared, the majority of it is just the really top 10 artists of the time. And they're still getting paid a vast amount of money because, it's also hard to quantify, well, if someone downloads it, is that actually a lost sale? Because it's not, you know, they don't really know if that person would have bought it anyway. And so it's really hard to say. You know, the other thing is it's a word of mouth thing where you get more sales. I mean, the music industry has made more. It's still going on every year. There's record profits, and people think, oh, well, how can that be? It's just how it is. Mm. If you look at the record books, if you look at the books of these companies, and they're all available because they're all public. You'll see that record companies are still, like the major record companies, I'm talking the mainstream ones, are still making record profits, even though, even post Napster. Now, what we're seeing with YouTube is that people are willing to create their own entertainment. People don't want the $400 million, or they don't need the $400 million movie blockbusters. They're willing to watch, you know, spend hours in front of the internet just watching people at home doing their own funny little things because the society is so amazingly diverse that it's entertaining to watch some of these, you know, freaky things that appear in the world. And so YouTube really is exploding all that. So when it comes to copyright, the whole notion of copyright, and may I add, it's the content industries, like these, you know, five or four or six, somewhere around that number of major content industry content providers around the world, they're the ones that are pushing this whole internet filtering scam hand-to-hand with the government while using, you know, child porn and all these sort of disgusting things as a lynch to basically crush down on just filtering everything. So they use things like copyright, things like child porn, and things that people find abhorrent, and rightly abhorrent, to then bring in this sort of dictatorial content filtering globally. And there really is no need for it because, A, they're not losing profits, and, B, it's only the major, major, ridiculously huge artists. Like, if you search for a small-time artist, you won't find them on BitTorrent. No one's sharing their music. You have to actually go to their website and buy it. So what's happening now is there's a whole new revolution in music distribution, because music distribution used to have to go through these massive retail chains, which were then hooked in with these five or six content providers. So their reach reached all around the world.
And can I just make one small point there? I just want to make one small point, that it is quite natural that as an artist gets bigger and bigger and more well-known, there comes a point where their material will find its way into BitTorrent seeds, right?
Mm-hmm.
But by that time, if we just allow this to work organically, you see, it will work. It will work beautifully.
Yeah, because by that time, you're making a lot of sense. And this is what I'm saying, there's a transition going on. And when we get to that other place where cultural changes take place, this thing will look after itself, and I think you're making perfect sense. But the old world that I used to know was the world where, you know, people had deals with record companies, and then they had to get some money from the deal, and the way they did that was through sales. But things have changed.
But see, the thing is, the record company,
we have to let it change. We have to let it change.
The whole point of a record company, for the folks out there that don't know, is distribution. So the record company would have all these distribution arms, like an octopus, to all these retail stores, and they'd release the album, they'd print all these CDs or cassettes back in the day. And they'd distribute them to all these corner shops. Nowadays, nobody goes to the corner shop. If you go to any music shop, they've got hardly any music in there. It's all DVDs. And if they, even if they're doing that, they're usually closing down. So yeah, People are buying their music online. And I know that I go straight to an artist's website. If I hear some crazy tune that I love on some local community radio station, which, by the way, is playing their music for free, and getting me hooked on the track, is then forcing me to go, hey, what was that? And going to their website and buying that. So instead of now that $3 or $5 that I paid for that track, or $2 or 99 cents or whatever it is, this micro money is going directly to the artist without having to pay a distribution network, without having to pay all these fat cat middlemen, and going directly to the artist. So the new system is actually far better for the artist, and for the ridiculous fat cats to pretend and sit there that the artist is suffering is ridiculous, because the record companies have made artists suffer for years.
Hey, guys, definitely. Can I just interject for one moment? Got a bit of a volume disparity between yourself and John. John's coming in really low, and you're coming in really loud.
Sorry, that's just my typical shouting style. Hang on.
Yeah, normally the Skype automatically compresses it, but today we're coming in on different volumes. I don't know why. So, John, maybe you could speak a little louder, and Josh, you could speak a little softer.
Well, I can vary the microphone position. That'll probably make it better.
Oh, great.
I've normally got the problem with my voice being too loud. But anyway,
great.
I'm agreeing with what you guys are saying. Like I said, I'm coming from an old world position, but I realise things have got to change, and this organic idea that you're putting forward, both Josh and Herowood, seems to make complete sense. We just have to let the system change, and it's, in the end, it'll sort itself out. That seems to be the way it's working.
Well, yeah, consider this. If we let the system work the way I think it organically could work, the people who are starting out, who basically want to get exposure, the first thing you want to do is you want to get exposure. You want someone to listen to you. So at the very beginning, you're not going to charge. You don't want to charge. You just want people to hear you. Then you get to a point where you produce an album and you put all that work into it. Well, of course, at that point, you're going to set up a web shop, and you're going to have that as something that people download. And people will pay to download it. People will, because they won't be able to get it off BitTorrent. And it'll be your supporters initially who do it anyway. And, of course, your supporters will pay for it. That's how you get a name. That's
the iTunes store is now 8 I think mid-2009, $8 billion they pulled in. $8 billion. The iTunes store. So people are willing to pay for content. And it's all available for free, all this, these big these movies and the songs that they're selling on iTunes, you know, if you really try to look apart from the less known artists, but a lot of it's for free, so people are willing to pay for art. There is no problem with that.
And most of us will pay for it if we have a better option than going to a site where you don't know the quality. It's variable. It's sometimes quick, sometimes slow. You go to something that provides a good service. See, people will pay for a good service. We've got to get back. We've got to reverse the thinking. Instead of thinking, how do we punish people? How do we frighten people into doing what we want them to do? Completely turn that around and think, let's provide good services. Because if you provide a good service, then people will pay. But they won't pay for something if the only option is a really expensive CD that they've got to buy or something free on BitTorrent. Of course, they're going to go for this.
The other mechanism that's got to be put in place is micropayment, true micropayment. Because at the moment, micropayment is only 99 cents. That's not micro enough.
We have to get down to the
sub cent level of payment. We have to be able to pay a quarter of a cent. We have to be able to pay 1 cent, 2 cents, 5 cents. That sort of money is what we need for the web to be truly, for people to, because you want to be able to pay for a song, whatever, you know, if you want to pay for a song and,
price is going to go lower,
charge a quarter of a cent, they should be able to. But right now, there's no way of people being able to set up such a function.
Exactly. That again is what happens in a true free economy, a free market. The market will drive the price down to that price point where someone is still able to make money, but it's competitive, right? And I think a dollar a song is too high. It's still too high. It's better than it was, but it still amounts to about $15 an album, right?
Yeah.
And you're not even getting anything physical. You're not even getting the actual CD jewel case with the nice insert, which, you know, that's what I... If I'm buying a present for someone, that's what I buy. I wouldn't download a whole bunch of songs and give them as a present to someone. You know what I mean? I mean, one of the main reasons why you invest money in downloading in products is quite often for gifts, right? So basically, the price of CD, printed and packaged CDs has to go down. The price of downloading a single song has to go down lower, a lot lower than $1. And then they will actually put Pirate Bay out of business, right? Because quite simply, Pirate Bay, you won't go to Pirate Bay if you can buy a song for 10 cents. If you could buy a song for 10 cents, would you go to Pirate Bay or just... No, I'd pay the 10 cents. And guess what? They'll still make a heap of money out of it. That's the amazing thing. Heaps of money will be made. But these organizations like Pirate Bay, they're just volunteer organizations. They're not criminals. I mean, they're not, it's totally ridiculous. And so for people who want to volunteer to do things like what Pirate Bay does, you can't demonize that. It's pointless. It's just a different way of thinking. Like once you understand it, it's so obvious, isn't it, Josh?
That's right. And for the listeners that don't know what Pirate Bay is, Pirate Bay isn't actually any, it doesn't hold any products or anything like that. Pirate Bay was a throwback to all the record companies trying to sue people like LimeWire, Napster and stuff like that, which were true peer-to-peer network, other networks that popped up. So what happened is Pirate Bay came along and were sharing what are called torrent files. And torrents allow you to zip up like a zip file almost, but they don't hold that file. So if you are willing to share something that's on your computer, if you've got a great song that you've made or a movie or something that you want to share, you can then right-click on it, make a torrent, and seed it. And Pirate Bay will pick up on that seed. And anyone that wants to download it will start downloading it. It will connect people that want that that product to the people that have it, so they don't actually store any of the files on hand.
Thanks so much for that, Josh. Look, we've probably done as much as we can on this topic. I want to take a short break, and after that, John would like to hear from you what your goals are for this year, if you're up for that.
Yeah, no problem.
Great. Just take a short break, and we'll be right back. This is Nickel Creek singing a traditional song, House Carpenter.
inside an altar love. One man said he, I have just returned from the salt, salt sea, and it's all for the love of thee. Come in, my own true love, and have a seat by me. It's been 3/4 of a long, long year since together we have been.
Sink them for to rise no more.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Okay, we're back with Truth News Radio with guests tonight, Josh Jackson and John Bursell. John Bursell is one of the most prominent people in Australia who is leading the charge against the deceptions and dishonesty of the War on Terror and 9/11. And John organised the amazing conference last year in November, which led to a whole lot of developments, a whole lot of news coverage. And we haven't had a chance to kind of catch up on the fallout from all of that and what you're planning to do with 9/11 Truth in Australia this year.
Yeah, well, it's a big question. It's something, obviously, that I've been thinking about a lot, and a lot of people in the movement, you know, we're sort of getting to the point, actually, last year that a lot of people are thinking about throwing in the towel in a way, or just accepting that we'd woken people up. We've got thousands and thousands and thousands. I'd hate to think how many DVDs 9/11 Truth has got out there as a movement worldwide in the last sort of 5 or so years. Basically, we haven't formed the population. Would you agree?
Best plastic ever made.
We have done that. The people that wanted to know about it have found out about it, haven't they?
It's getting, you know, easier and easier for people to get the information. If they're willing to put anything into Google, they'll certainly get there. A lot of people still just don't want to know, though. So
they do. That's right. But I think we've done a great job of getting the word out to the people that have open ears, and we've done our best to raise the media's interest in the events of 9/11 and the subsequent questions that have been found and the investigations that have been carried out, the research that's been done and the groups that have formed. Obviously, the Architects and Engineers group, coming up to 1,000 members now, moving to 1,050 rapidly. And, we don't know where that's going to go. They get more and more political power and more interest from academia as the numbers grow and as the member list grows. So there's lots of great things happening. But as far as, like I was saying, there were a lot of people that were sort of feeling as if they were beating their head against a brick wall after years and years and years of activism, not really ever breaking through into the media in a major way, and also not having any success really politically. Still no political people except for, a few people in Japan. Yukiya Fujita, senator there. A few people from the Greens around the world here and there, a few people from the Libertarians here and there around the world that are asking questions. There's a few people within inside the EU. But really, 9/11 Truth sort of hit sort of a wall, and I think people were starting to think, well, what do we do now? And now a lot of people made the argument that the campaign's going to be an extremely long one, and we're actually doing a lot better than, say, the movement to expose the crimes, the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Now, and I think that's true. Now, we have to really be very satisfied that we've done well with what we've had to deal with, considering the concentration and the resistance of the press, especially in this country. Yourself, Harewood, and Josh, that Australia's media is probably the worst in the world now. Would you agree with that?
Oh, look, it's right up there with the worst of the worst. Can I just make a quick point about the Kennedy assassination? And this should be a sobering thought for those people who think that if we get a new investigation, everything will be hunky-dory. The Kennedy conspiracy theories, which were raging all through the 60s and 70s, right, finally culminated in a new investigation which took place in about 1978. It was called the House Committee on Assassination, and it was led by, congressmen, had support from members of the government, and it was a serious reinvestigation of all the evidence of the Kennedy assassination. And guess what happened? It got nowhere. It was completely stifled, even though there was a lot of information that came out of it, and some of the conclusions that were reached were that, yes, there is evidence that there was a larger conspiracy, but they were not given access to any of the information that would have been able to prove one way or the other, like the autopsy, the full autopsy records and photographs and the full forensic information that was all hidden. They could never get access to, they couldn't subpoena witnesses. They couldn't do some of the basic things that they needed to prove the case conclusively. And most people are completely unaware of that actually occurred. because its findings were dropped, that they were hardly even reported in the media, and then quickly forgotten. So
they end up with a probability of a conspiracy, but they really, you know, even the final conclusions of the report still back the magic bullet theory, because they couldn't look at the forensics. Like you said, they just weren't able to do the job. But we do have a completely different situation, and this is where the hope is with 9/11, is that the brazen nature, or, you know, maybe the complete arrogance of the cartel that brought us 9/11, whoever that might be, most likely, you know, people like Dick Cheney and the neoconservatives, with assistance from the CIA, Mossad, etc., that, you know, the powerful secret organisations throughout the world. You know, they were so brazen with these events, imagining that they were going to go into a full police state mode with the continuity of government legislation that they had at hand. But a few things went wrong, whatever. But in the end, you know, we've ended up with a lot of evidence. You know, especially with the dust, you know, with the nanothermite and the spherical iron and other scientific proven facts. Like with the Kennedy assassination, all they really had that was outside of the control of the government was the records on the sound. You know, they looked at the acoustics. They had that, didn't they? And that committee looked at the acoustics. They also were able to look at the Zapata film, which was only taken by accident, because someone managed to get through with that small camera and take that film, because that was never meant to be seen by anyone. So we are in a lot more of a powerful position, I suppose, with 9/11, with the chance of actually getting the truth exposed eventually. But we have other things against us. The nature of misinformation is very strong. The nature of cognitive dissonance, the group mind, the psychological ingrained, you know, fear that was put in through that being televised live, us all seeing it, really put us in this sort of ongoing state of shock, you know, sort of like some sort of battle stress or something that people are in. And consequently, we're not able to address it. You know, if we had this sort of evidence about Kennedy that we have about 9/11, maybe it would have been exposed, but there wasn't anywhere near the sort of level of evidence. Obviously, with the internet and other things, you know, that's helped us as well. But what I was trying to say was that we sort of got to this stage where we sort of thought, well, people are starting to say to me on the phone, I talked to a lot of people in the States that, wow, I'm at the end of the, you know, I'm going to give up. I've just had enough. I've run out of money. I've run out of interest. My wife's left me, or whatever's happened. A lot of people suffered, you know, through those last sort of 5 years fighting this campaign, because everyone just believed that it would have to come out. Look at this. Look at Building 7. Look at this. Look at that. How can these people deny what we're saying? And I think people really thought that it was going to come out and there would be a revolution and we'd see the world change forever and these criminals would be exposed and the wars would come to an end. But we haven't seen that happen. But we have seen, and this is what I was talking to Janice Matthews in my recent series of interviews that I'm doing for the Visibility 9/11 podcast, which is visibility911.com. You can find the latest two interviews I've done there. And I've got another new interview coming up with Stephen Wan, a doctor who's a media personality Josh might have met that works for Channel 9 and a few other mainstream channels. Anyway, I'm doing this radio series, and I talked to Janice about what the real power of 9/11 is. Like Harewood said, you know, the new investigation might not get anywhere. We don't know whether we're going to get it. We have to change the system. The whole system has to change, and the only way we're going to do that is through subverting the power of these people, of the media and of the government, by exposing these truths. You know, just like with the climate change discussion that's been going on with the alternate sort of media. We are subverting governments and we're subverting the media, because people are starting to realise that they're just told bullshit every day of the week. And through that, then eventually there will be some sort of change. Maybe people will start demanding direct democracy next time before we go to a war. Or they might start demanding more transparency when they get an opportunity to do so.
That's right. I mean, for me personally, John, the 9/11 truth movement, I always thought it was hard, and I to get a proper independent investigation with subpoena powers and stuff, I'm still hoping that would happen. But for me, it's the hearts and minds of people, because it's the hearts and minds of people that if they know that 9/11 was an inside job, was a false flag attack, then there won't be another. They won't be as quick to knee jerk next time that there is a terrorist attack or something like of that sense. or a big event. So, you know, we're seeing again with climate change, we're seeing it with Osama videos that are coming out, Osama bin Laden, like people are just more skeptical.
Absolutely.
Which is fantastic, which is a big giddy up to everyone. And I just want to give, and, you know, I'm not one to give it, but everyone in the 9/11 truth movement should give themselves a pat on the back, from the little granny that just gave out one DVD to her friend, or to all the people that went out weeks and weeks on the 11th of every month and are still going out. You know, give yourselves a pat on the back and keep on going. You know, we shouldn't give up. We've got to keep on going. But saying that, the hearts and minds of people are really one. I mean, I talk to most people, they go, yep, 9/11 was an inside job. I've seen all the videos. I've seen the evidence. It's truly obvious. I mean, if any of our listeners don't know, I mean, all the videos are for free online. You can literally, you type into a Google video or video.google.com or YouTube, Blueprint for Truth, or you know, some of these other great video names, and you'll see it right there. So it's I reckon the hearts and minds are one, and if they haven't, it's all there to see now.
Here's my...
Yeah, it's moving into the intellectual realm now. You know, more and more you know, engineering and scientists and architects, etc. People are waking up to this information. And as we saw, you know, the very worthwhile tour that was put on, the Hard Evidence Tour, down under and then on to New Zealand, which Harold said, you know, was amazingly successful, really bringing credibility to the movement. And obviously, you know, my aims for this year are to host this podcast for Michael Woolsey, Visibility 9/11, and keep doing interviews with people and getting the information out, keep people up to date and current with what the latest information is and what people are seeing and what direction they're thinking things are going, keeping them enthusiastic that the world can change, I suppose, in a way. Also, I'm interested in continuing to organise these events because they really are good for the soul, for people to get together and to believe and hope and trust that, you know, eventually we can you know, break through and demonstrate to people how corrupted and how you know, disgusting our world really is, so that, you know, that hopefully their children and you know, the future of the world won't be as bad as it might be with the dark view of it that we have.
Can I just give?
Well, that's right. And even if it stays the same and doesn't get worse,
can I just give?
It could have been a lot worse because, as I said, and Harold might want to comment on this. I know he's aware of it. The continuity of government and the 9/11 attacks. If that fourth plane, Flight 93, had hit a target, which possibly could have been, you know, we've heard people say it could have been Building 7. I don't particularly think so, but it might have been the White House. They had a plan where basically there was going to be a full American coup and you were going to see martial law in America, and America was going to become the new Rome in a way, and you would have seen some sort of taking over of the whole world. And it could have been a very, very dark police state sort of place, but that didn't happen. A lot of things went wrong on 9/11 for the perpetrators, and the exposing nature of the 9/11 truth movement through the internet has really got a lot of information out there that's put everyone in government in question. You know, from, you know, people like you know, my idol previously, you know, Peter Garrett, who now I see as a weak person, you know, which is, it's pretty hard for me to handle. I used to sing a lot of his songs in my band. But, you know, I'm basically disgusted in his behaviour because he must well know, you know, that 9/11 is suspect, but he says nothing. And all these politicians are saying nothing, in Australia at least. And it's disgusting, and it makes us realise how weak, you know, our system is to allow people to be silent on these issues. And it's sort of, yeah, it's changed my whole view on things. And I respect the little guy in the street that will stand up and say the truth much more than I respect anybody, president or prime minister. I actually have disdain for those sort of people these days.
John, can I just give a perspective on where I think we might head, or, you know, what approach we might have for the future? I'm getting this partly from
Sydney Sheehan was saying some things that were making you listen. You were telling me here.
She sparked some ideas because there's a great little speech she gave, which is posted at 911oz.com.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, what I want to say is this: that, you know, yeah, we should keep the focus on 9/11 because it's really important. And however, within the focus of 9/11, we should reduce it down to the key things that are the most important of that important stuff, and minimize talking about the stuff that's of less relevance, because we don't need to, because there's just too much anyway. So we need to streamline it and focus it. But in addition to that, in addition to just talking about 9/11, we need to then expand our discussion. And this is, I think, maybe where we're falling short a bit as a movement or whatever, because I just want to go through some things that are going on right at the moment. Now,
can I just interject just quickly there?
Uh-huh. Yeah, go ahead.
Just really quickly is that I totally agree. But the thing is, we can focus as a movement on things that people know about. I mean, I was wearing this one of the 9/11 Truth shirts, and one of the I was walking past, I managed to catch one of the producers from 60 Minutes, and he said, "Oh, what's that T-shirt?" And it said on there, "Did Australia go to war on a false pretext into Iraq and Afghanistan?" And he said, "Oh, of course I did." But he was meaning more the WMDs and stuff, and I think it's a really good approach as a peace movement to let's go after the things that everybody is that's in everybody's mainstream conscience. Why are we still in Afghanistan?
Well, you've stolen my point, because that's exactly what I was about to say. So that's exactly what I'm leading into, but I just want to.
Just to add to that, exactly. Sorry that we sort of stuffed you up there. You were going to go to something really interesting. Sorry,
I can handle it.
But
I'm a man.
Peter Dale Scott just brought out a small paper that he presented to the peace movement, and he's suggesting, sort of off the back of probably, you know, he's thinking these thoughts himself, but, you know, we see Cinder Sheen, you know, that I've been trying to close ranks on the movement for the last 2 years, and that's what the hard evidence tool was all about, getting back to stuff that we can prove, things that we know, you know, things that we know will break through with academics when they see the simple evidence, the scientific evidence. And you have other people that continue to do well, people like John Gold, that look at it from a very factual basis where, you know, Cheney said this and then he said this. This is a lie. This is clear. You know, we have the commissioners saying that the commission was flawed. We're looking at the things that are not contested, like what Josh is saying. They're not contested. Things about why we went to the war, things about, you know, David Kelly, 70 years locking up his autopsy, you know, things like that. They're all joined together, right? They all come back to 9/11. And consequently, Cindy Sheehan saying, look, you know, there's too much going on. We can't understand all this stuff that the 9/11 truth is too technical. We need some simple things, you know, Building 7, you know, the failed commission report, you know, 5 or 6 points. And you'll see what Dr. Stephen Jones talked about in his lecture, Science and Community, which will be available on DVD soon. He's just touching on 5 or 6 things, simple things, things that are obvious, things that are clear, and he's just saying we need to react. The population, the government need to react to these things, and they need to have a position, and we need to just keep aiming at those things. Now, what Peter Dale Scott is saying sort of in this context is that there has to be two sides to the truth movement. Two sides to the peace movement. The peace movement just can't be about opposing the empire and opposing wars, the resource wars or whatever you want to call them, whatever's going on out there at the moment. It can't just be about that. It has to be about the pretext and the truth of what's really going behind in the deep politics. Right?
Yeah, and truth and justice have to go hand in hand with reconciliation
without
and peace.
Without truth, you can't have justice, you know. Yeah. Without exposing the truth, there's just no way that we can have justice in the world. And without justice, you're never going to stop the wars, because there's always going to be someone that's hating someone. And so that's what Peter Dale Scott says. There has to be two tiers. And this is how we have to take the 9/11 Truth campaign, the anti-war and terror campaign, to the peace movement as, look, we're another tier. We're another angle. We're another, we're cutting off the other leg of the beast, you know. And that's really what it's all about. We have to bring that back into the context. And I don't think we've seen this sort of truth and justice part of the peace movement since the 60s, because I think it was sort of beaten out of them.
Can I also make a point that the anti-war movement in Australia, at least, is very heavily dominated by people with a political agenda. And when I say political agenda, they want a socialist revolution. A lot of these people who are behind the anti-war movement here want to use the war as a trigger for an agenda. Now, that explains why they're not that concerned about the truth, because it's not so much about truth for them, it's about exploiting people's anger to
Yeah, that's why they call it anti-war and not peace. That's why they use language, because then it still gets people angry, you know, and then they...
Yes.
Sorry, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah,
but they
some
use
of these...
subtle things like that, and it's so quite aggravating. That every time
running...
I go to a peace rally, yeah. it's these socialists, these Marxists out there pushing this sort of political agenda, which is shown historically to kill millions of people and have millions of people in poverty standing in breadlines. I mean, it's disgusting that these are the types of people that are the only ones left to push for peace.
Well, look, I'm happy for us to have debates and arguments, and I'm happy for anyone who wants to be a communist or a socialist to be that. But and I think they're totally entitled to have those views, right? And we can work it all out. We can work out the debates about what's the best way of running the economy, what's the best way of running society. However, what I object to is using an issue of truth and justice, which is what really it is about. It's about justice and peace, right? The people who are aware that our invasions of these countries was totally wrong, right? To use that, to harness that in the service of a political agenda, which then is so cynically focused on its goals that it doesn't even really care about truth. It only cares about harnessing the fact that you're angry to then direct you into the revolution against capitalism or whatever.
Yeah.
And then directs hostility and you know, deep contempt towards people who run 9/11 truth rallies and you know, walk up to them with some information and they treat it with just the utmost contempt. That is really obnoxious. That is really appalling behaviour.
They oppose free thought in a way. Like, that's, you know, I don't know if that's a bit heavy. Like, at heart, I'm like a socialist in some ways, but then I'm a libertarian on the other side, you know.
I'm with you there, John. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah,
well, you know, how, because that's sort of what's happened to us in the truth movement is we, you know, a lot of us, you know, have come from the left and now we've ended up at the right because, and it's funny, James Cinnamon wrote something to me today about, he really wants to call out these Marxist leftists that won't hear the truth, and he doesn't know why. He can't understand it, and I can't understand it. You can't understand it. Maybe we really need to start targeting these people and say, look, this is abhorrent what they're doing. This is, you know, it's treasonous in a way. I don't know if they're nationalist in their socialist Marxist views, but you know, to not call out the truth about these wars. It's treasonous. It's unpatriotic. It's unnatural for anyone with inside a group, you know, a human group, whether it's a tribe, a community, a nation, whatever it is, to not call out crimes that are killing its members. You know,
I totally agree. And one thing that really, really, really upset me is that we went to a peace walk here, rally, and it was put on by, you know, surprise, surprise, the Socialist Alliance. And we walked around the block, all yelling, no more war, peace, peace, or whatever we were chanting. And I walked out the front of the rally, and the big banner right at leading the rally was a big Socialist Alliance ad. So they didn't even have a banner saying out of Iraq now or something like that. It was basically Socialist Alliance. And so the video cameras or any news that would have been there showing the front of the march basically had a big ad for the Socialist Alliance. And of course, they're not going to show that on air.
They could show it on air. Look, basically, they might show it on air because basically what that's going to do is it's going to send a message to everyone watching television, oh, the people who are against the war are radical revolutionaries. The people who are against the war want to overturn the system and bring in a communist system. See, that's propaganda. Now, whether that's intentional, whether there's a conspiracy between the Socialist Alliance and the system, I don't care. It doesn't matter. The outcomes here are what we're looking at. And basically, when the anti-war movement is badged as the anti-capitalist movement, that's what's going to happen. Now, you will get people who go along with that, but actually most people are against it. Most people aren't for it, so most people then will it'll stigmatize those people who
and look, and we know that most, you know, 90%, 95, 99% of people don't want war. They want peace. They want to live in a peaceful world. And it's just horrible to think that the only people that are activists for the peace movement are people with an extreme political agenda.
But look, and we've got to break through,
it doesn't matter what political agenda, because we're in a free society, or so-called free society. We can say whatever we want. If someone wants to have a Marxist view on things, it's fine. You know,
I think there's a good explanation of that, and I think it's the success of 9/11 that really brought this new world. Because obviously, people, when you interfere the population of a threat that is everywhere and anywhere at any time, and it's, you know, it's got this religious crazy nature to it, like, you know, Islamic fundamentalism, so we're told that someone's just going to turn up with a bomb, you know, at the shopping mall, and you're going to get killed, then people don't care about killing millions of Muslim people. And so there's no peace movement in this country because people actively support the idea of killing these people en masse because they were so successful with 9/11. So what happens is there's this massive void in the peace movement, which is normally working class.
When you say success, just to clarify,
they're the ones sending their kids to war, right? Normally the, you know, anti-war movement or a peace movement is normally the mums and fathers and children of good people that are out on the streets, you know, trying to get their sons and daughters back from the war and also try to stop the killing. You know, we don't have those people out there because they're actively supporting the war because of the fear that was created from 9/11. So we've got this void. So we see someone like the Socialist Alliance come in on it as a political agenda. And because there's a void there, there's not enough normal people there to sort of say, well, hey, what are you doing with that frickin' sign out the front of the rally? Piss it off. You know, yeah. Like, because that's what would happen in a peace rally back in the 60s, I'd imagine, because people were there for a particular purpose. But the other thing that we've got going on with these, you know, with this sort of agenda is that, you know, obviously they think that what we're doing, I think O'Hara was trying to make that point, being truthful is all about thinking by yourself and being an individual and having free thought. And they probably don't support that idea. So we've really got an organisation running a peace movement that wants to exclude us every which way from Sunday.
But at the same time, let me just balance that out by saying that there are these really amazing people like Cindy Sheehan, and I'm sure there are many people in Australia of her calibre too who are just waiting in the wings, ready to step up. And you see,
but there's no socialists in America, are they? Socialism's like communism there, so they don't have like a socialist alliance, I don't imagine, in their peace group. I'm not sure.
Well, I think the socialist element does exist in the US, but I do think, you know, there's so many more people there. There's so many different issues. It's hard to compare the two countries.
It is.
But a couple of things. You know, we need to have an anti-war movement and a 9/11 truth movement that is all part of the one movement. I just don't think we shouldn't have to be confined to just talking about 9/11 truth. We should be able to move between talking about 9/11 truth and a couple of other stories I want to talk about right now since I've got the mic. Basically, for example, did you know how many missile drone strikes have there been in Pakistan this year since 1 January? I mean, have a guess. Anyone want to hazard a guess?
In the hundreds?
Well, I'm just talking about since January of this year.
20?
Okay.
Well, there's been 12, okay. That's quite a lot. That's, you know, that's more than one a week.
This year?
Yeah, since beginning of 2010.
Oh, my God.
Now, there's a great Wikipedia.
I thought you were talking about since Obama sort of started it. But, yeah, they're probably around a couple of hundred or so. But 12, this month. So, they're sort of, you know,
yeah,
one
I mean,
every
there's
other day.
There's a great little Wikipedia site article here which is keeping track of it. The most recent was February the 2nd. 19 missiles were fired by US drones at 4 different villages, killing at least 29 people. That was on February 2. That's like 2 days ago. January 29, 6 to 15 killed when drones fire 3 missiles on a compound, blah, 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 blah. January 19, 2 missiles fired at a compound and a vehicle. January 17, missile strike in south of Waziristan kills at least 20 people. January 15, it just goes on and on. It just goes on and on and on. What they are doing in Pakistan is absolutely staggering because this is not even acknowledged as a war.
And this works against the peace movement because there aren't soldiers. Our soldiers, they're dying doing this killing. It's automated killing. It's so benign. It's, you know, no wonder the peace movement's having such a hard time because we don't get to see it on the telly. You know, they don't. There's no interest in getting this information out there because there's not enough of our own people dying, and there's not the media support of getting to the truth of the matter. So it's really difficult to get any purchase, isn't it?
Indeed. And another
point.
But
that's why I think as a movement we should really be pushing the things that we know of. I mean, 9/11 is fantastic and we all have done a great job. Let's push the stuff that we know. There were no WMDs. Let's go after them. Why are we still there? Why are we still bombing poor farmers that have nothing to do with Al-Qaeda? And why, on the news, when it says 10 Al-Qaeda fighters got killed, well, show me the proof. I want to see the proof that they're Al-Qaeda. Where was the, where's the judge, the jury, and the you know, where is it all? Where's the actual proof that these people are Al-Qaeda and not just farmers that are trying to get by in this war-torn country just to support this massive war machine?
Mm. Indeed. And look, another point, the Iraq War Inquiry in the UK has just concluded with Tony Blair coming on there to basically completely whitewash his involvement. We saw, you know, this is another example of a failure of justice, even where you do have an inquiry, when you have a new investigation. You see, and it was touted in the news as being a big deal, but whenever they reported on the news, they always said, we don't expect there to be any consequences from this. Well, they were right. There were no consequences. There were no legal consequences for anybody. There was no cross-examination. There was no proper due process. We know that Tony Blair was taking false information. We know that he was requesting that it be packaged to him in a certain way. It came out from all these different sources, and yet the Iraq War Inquiry ends up complete whitewash. Mm-hmm. So again, this is, I think, where we in this kind of truth movement, we need to be reminding people of these things all the time as well. And another really important point.
Well, I'm doing it on Facebook, and I suppose other people, these new methods of media are something where people have to stop talking about, you know, they took the dog for a walk or they bought a new dress or whatever it might be. And let's start using, you know, these networking sites. That's what I'm doing on Facebook now. I'm getting this news out and making people think about it. And, you know, I think you're doing a great job on Twitter, and Josh, you're doing the same on Facebook as well. And that's what we need to do, keep reminding people of these simple truths. You know, like this David Kelly thing, like I don't know how many people, I've not had one argument from anyone that I work with or anyone that's in my, I've mentioned to everyone that I've come across. Did you hear about David Kelly, you know, the guy that was, that exposed, Blair for the sexing up of the evidence that sent us to Iraq that killed 1 million people?
Yeah.
He went for a walk and mysteriously died, you know, supposedly slashed his wrist with a blunt knife or something.
After
ridiculous.
Warning people that he was under threat, saying that he might end up dead in the woods in emails, does end up dead in the woods.
He goes for a walk and he's dead, and then a whole group of like eminent doctors demand an investigation, and then they lock up the coronial investigation for 70 years. Now, that is a state assassination. There's absolutely no doubt that he was assassinated by the state for the face of the nation.
And you know, this is where...
And why isn't there people in the street? Why isn't everybody riot or something? I don't know. It's like ridiculous.
I know. But, you know, the thing is, this is where I really think comedy comes into play. Because when you can laugh at this stuff, like at someone, it shows how ridiculous it is. I mean, this is that's kind of when someone says to me, "Oh, 9/11, you know, there might be another 9/11." I sort of laugh. I laugh directly at them. I said, "Are you kidding? You really believe that story?" And that's when you bring it to them like that, like by laughing, they almost think, "Oh, geez, I'm being a bit stupid. Why is he laughing? You know, am I that, you know, oh, geez, I must, you know, it must be such common knowledge that people are just almost laughing at it now." Because this David Kelly, I mean, it's just so ridiculously transparent that it's laughable.
It is.
You know, but yeah, people should be, I mean, if it wasn't so sick, but people should actually be in the street, you know, calling for us an immediate withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
But then
is there any other way, Harewood, to look at the 70 years locking up of that information other than a state assassination in historical terms?
It's very, very, makes them look so guilty. There was actually a second story that came out saying that they may change their mind on that, but, you know, that doesn't mean anything, does it? I mean, I'm just trying to find the story now because it was here on Twitter, but basically one of the judges said, oh, look, maybe we'll revise that. But
make it 100 years.
Yeah, yeah, who knows? They might make it longer. I mean,
Well, people are living longer these days, so, you know.
it is absurd. Look, guys, we're sort of running out of time, unfortunately. Didn't get through more than a fraction of the stuff I wanted to talk about, but it's really been a great discussion. I just want to thank you so much for the opportunity to do this.
No worries. And for once again, John, I'd like to personally thank you for all your hard effort and work in the 9/11 Truth Movement in Australia. You know, you've been an inspiration to so many people, and it's just it's really an honour to know you personally, and also with you, Harold. You know, you
yeah.
too, man. You've
so
done
much.
So much, and it's for all those people out there that I've met and that we've worked with over the past, you know, 9 years, it's really wonderful to see the spirit of people seeking the truth. And, you know, I'm looking forward to years and years of more of it.
Absolutely.
You know, one thing I just had to say before we go is that sure. I'm not going to be leading the 11th Day Actions this year. I will be involved when I'm not working. Obviously, I took about 2 months' worth of leave over the last 2-3 years to facilitate attending events and organising events. And I work shift work and I work long hours. I've incurred quite a debt through what I've been up to the last few years as well, which I'd like to pay off. So this year is going to be more of a media campaign for me. Still planning on organising a big event on September 11 this year. It actually falls on a Saturday. So it'll be in the city, probably at the Tom Mann Theatre, and we'll probably have you know, some engineering science type people there to talk about, you know, the more recent discoveries in that world, you know, and putting information out for the new person in the public that wants to be involved in these issues. So if anyone's thinking about doing 11th month action, just get out there and do it. That's really what it's all about. It's about just getting out there, even by yourself. It's all good. If anybody wants any information about how to do it or wants to borrow a banner or take one of the banners that I've got or whatever, I'm happy to loan that to you. I just have to withdraw my energy from that. It's just it's taking a little bit too much of a toll. Putting $300 or $400 worth of merchandise out a month just can't be sustained forever.
Great. If anyone wants to take up John's offer, just email editor@truthnews.com.au and we'll forward the emails to you, John. Everyone, please check out John's podcast at visibility911.org.
.com.
Sorry. Visibility911.com. John's hosting it. It's really good. He's got some great stuff. I'm going to listen to the next episode. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, people, remember to sign up to our Twitter feed. It's Truth News Oz, O-Z, at twitter.com. You can subscribe to the RSS if you're not a member or follow us there. It's really, really some amazing stories that we stick up there.
Thanks.
Also, comment on our...
I'd say it's superior to InfoWars, especially for Australian-based information.
Wow, that's
you know,
a plug.
What you're putting up there on Twitter is a really excellent sort of overview of what's going down. I'm very impressed with that feed.
Well, look, you know, we need a testimonials page, and I've actually had so many emails... I get a lot of private emails, and I'm actually going to possibly post some of those on a testimonials page so people can get a sense. We do have a lot more listening than commenting. It'd be great to get more comments, but, you know, we can't... We love it that you listen, and, you know, we want to build up the numbers so that we increase the awareness, and that's what we do.
Yeah, and also the Skype line. If you subscribe to our emails at truthnews.com.au, you'll get the Skype line, and you can always just phone in and leave a message. We'll play the ones on air if we like them.
Indeed.
And also, if you have any feedback for us, if we've said something wrong, or you'd like to correct us in any way, you know, this is about truth, and you know, we don't know everything. So if you'd like to correct us, it's always very good.
We do. We look forward to that.
Someone from the Socialist Alliance—that'd be good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Correct us on what we were saying.
We'll have you on the show. We'll give you the floor.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, guys. All right. It's been a great pleasure.
Till next week.
Yeah.
See you later.
Yeah. Good night, Australia.
Thank you.
Good night, world.